Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Garden Grove in San Diego, California. In 1977, at age 19, he signed with the Detroit Tigers. He played shortstop for 19 seasons with the Tigers, and with Lou Whitaker, formed the longest continuous double play combination in Major League history, and in 1984 was named the World Series MVP. Since 2014, he served as a special assistant to the Tigers general manager, and he was just elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. Affectionately known as Tram, his name, Alan Trammell. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to one of the two newest members of the Baseball Hall of Fame, number 3, Alan Trammell. Alan, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Well, thank you, Jack. These last few weeks have been somewhat of a whirlwind. I'm still trying to put it all into perspective, pinch myself here and there. And my gosh, when I got that call a few weeks ago, quite the honor. And again, to go in with one of my teammates, Jack Morris, who I felt was well-deserving and long overdue, it's going to help to have somebody to kind of lean on a little bit as we go through this process over the next few months. But we are two proud Tigers.
And you've also got Mr. Tiger, Al Kaline, to help get through. So,
well, that's a great point. There's no question about it. There is only one Mr. Tiger, and that is Al. He has been with the Detroit Tigers over approximately 65 years. And just with one club his whole life, and what a human being. And I've over the years I've been observant, and I've tried to. I'm not trying to compare myself, Jack, by no means, but I'm just I was watching and how he's conducted himself, and I've tried to take bits and pieces of Al, just how the humility and just what a genuinely good person he is. Those are great qualities, and again, Mr. Tiger, happy to be a part of that Tiger family that's now two more of us in the Hall of Fame.
Tram, you've always been humble, and there's only been 3 Tigers in our 125-year history who have worn that old English D as a player for at least 20 years. Ty Cobb, Al Kaline, Alan Trammell. What if we start?
Yeah, that's a little overwhelming to say that. And again, when you're growing up, first of all, Jack, the dream is to play and to make it to the major leagues. And then, you know, you're just trying to establish yourself. You know, want to play well, but to be able to do it for one team. I know a lot of players, and most of the time it's out of their control, but. For me to look back on my baseball card and see one team for my whole career, it means something. And to be in that company with Ty Cobb and Al Kaline, you know, again, I'm just shaking my head as I'm speaking right now just to say how that doesn't sound right. That, you know, Ty Cobb and Al Kaline, okay, and Alan Trammell. But you know what? The facts are the facts. And I'm proud that I was able to do it for a long period of time. And, you know, again, on that back of that baseball card, you see one team, the Detroit Tigers.
Alan, where did you get your love for baseball?
Well, I think that's something that it's somewhat you're born with, to be honest with you. I mean, going back to my parents and especially my mom, who, you know, I remember as kids, you know, the radio was really big, and we listened to a lot of baseball on the radio, and she was a huge Stan Musial fan, and she always felt that she was originally from Pennsylvania, and that's where Stan is from, even though he played for the Cardinals. But she used to always tell me about how humble he was, and this is going back to when I was a child. And just early on, the hand-eye coordination that I was blessed with, you know, going out and playing catch with my dad, I was able to do those kinds of things. I've got pointers and things, but I was blessed with that, at least initially, to be able to catch a baseball and do those kinds of things, and obviously work on them as I got older. But, you know, just anything with a ball in my hand, I just gravitated to. And it's just something, again, it goes back to, I think, sometimes it's just something that's within. And it's just something I always wanted to do. I've always had energy, a little more than probably most. And that's really kind of how it started.
Let's go back 40 years. You're 19 years old, and you're the second-round pick of the Tigers. How did you find out?
Hold on. I just want to make sure we correct that. 40 years ago, I was 18 when I signed.
Okay.
I came to the big leagues at 19, but when I signed, I was 18-year-old.
All right. How did you find out, and what did the Tigers offer you?
Well, I was at school, and the way the draft is, it's so different than it is nowadays, along with everything else, with the social media and the internet and all those things, the availability of all those to have access to. But back in 1976, I knew from a high school coach that I was going to get drafted, had no idea how high it was going to be, but I got a pass from the office at Kearney High here in San Diego that got me out of class, and I was told to call home, and I called home, and that's when my parents had told me that the Detroit Tigers had selected me in the second round, and, you know, that started the whirlwind at that particular time about my mind, you know, drifting. You know, I wanted to become a professional ball player, but my parents wanted me to go to school like most parents did, and I had a scholarship offer that I had accepted to go to UCLA, so I had that in place. You know, when I got drafted in the second round, that was kind of the one point that really kind of superseded, that got me in, like, boy, they must like me if they drafted me that high. And as far as the figures were, I mean, my gosh, it's so different. But I ended up signing for $35,000. I was the second pick in the second round, and at that time there was only 24 teams. 77 is when Seattle and Toronto came in, so at 76 there were still only 24 teams, and you know, that showed me that they wanted me. So I ended up signing for that $35,000, and I guess the rest is history.
Let's go back to September 9th, 1977. You are 19 years old by then.
Yeah.
And you have your major league debut at Fenway Park, the second game of a doubleheader. What do you remember about that day?
Well, what I remember is that I had a sidekick along with me, and that was Lou Whitaker. Sweet Lou Whitaker was with me. We had been called up the day before, and actually we had known for, I don't know if it was a week or 10 days or sometime prior to that, but they wanted us to finish out our double-A season. We were down in Montgomery, Alabama, we ended up winning the championship, the Southern League championship. But we had a bunch of rain delays, and so it kept getting postponed and pushed back, and we were all anxious, but we wanted to win down there. So we ended up winning this. We got a call. We went in on the 7th, so the 8th, we fly up to Detroit. Now, we didn't even realize that the Tigers had an afternoon game on the 8th. So Lou and I take the flight up to Detroit. We get to the ballpark right before the game. We sign our contract. The Tigers are playing Baltimore that day in an afternoon game. We get in the dugout. The next thing you know, the game's over. We're flying to Boston. So there lies September the 9th. The second game of the doubleheader, Ralph Houck's the manager. He has Lou and myself in the lineup. And Lou's hitting second, I'm hitting ninth. And what I remember is we both got hits our first time up off a pitcher by the name of Reggie Cleveland. We ended up losing that game, I believe, 9-8. But Lou went 3-for-4. I went 2-for-3. The next day was the game of the week, Jack, which was a big deal back then. And Ralph told us that we were going to start that game on national television. So we went from the second game of a doubleheader on the 9th to on September 10th playing on the game of the week.
We're talking to Alan Trammell. When we come back, we're going to ask him about another legend, Ernie Harwell. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula, and we're with Alan Trammell, who played shortstop for 19 seasons with the Tigers, and with Lou Whitaker, formed the longest continuous double play combination in Major League history. You were blessed to be around this legend, Ernie Harwell. Talk to us about Ernie, please.
Well, what a gentleman. Much like an Al Kaline, those guys, I put them in the highest regard. They're on a pedestal as far as I'm concerned. But they do put their pants on just like we all do. But just the humility again and the way that Ernie would treat you. It wouldn't matter if you were the president of the United States or somebody that he didn't know, never met, but he would always give you the time of day and talk to you with a smile and just that voice. I think any great announcer, at least from my point of view, it's they paint that picture, but it's the voice that resonates that, you know, you can they paint that picture and they describe that so thoroughly that when you're listening on the radio, that's what the good ones do. But Ernie was such a gentleman and just such a good person that, again, he is one of many people that touched my life, and I'm so thankful that our lives crossed, that that I was a friend of Ernie's. But Ernie treated everybody the same, and that was the way that you would hope to be treated, with respect and with kindness. And that was Ernie Harwell.
Another person that really touched your life is one of only 23 managers in the Baseball Hall of Fame, Sparky. Tell us about Sparky.
Well, we could do a whole show on Sparky, Jack. You know what? The best way for me to describe him is really an extension of my parents. And really kind of what I mean by that is that when Sparky came into my life, I was 21 years old. Ralph Houck was the first manager. Then he retired at that particular time. Les Moss came in for a few months in the 1979 season. And they let him go, but that was because that Sparky had been let go after the 78 season by the Reds, and that he was available. And, you know, looking back, I mean, it was a great move because it was great for us and the nucleus of the team that was just starting there, that we needed some direction. But again, as I mentioned about an extension of my parents, because it was more of some tough love, again, in that era, that's kind of how it was done. There was discipline, there was structure, but it was needed. And it was needed. We thought we were young players. Well, we were young players, and we had some ability, but we needed more than that. And little did we know, we didn't know very much, that we needed that direction that Sparky gave us. And it took a few years. And, again, we kind of lose fact of and the years go by so quickly. But it took us a few years to go, you know, through some of the tough losses, to learn the lessons, to learn how to play the way he wanted us to play. But once we got it, we figured that the old man had a method to his madness. And Lord, did he ever. And he knew exactly what he was doing. So, again, here's a 21-year-old kid along with a lot of other guys in their early 20s that were very impressionable. Here comes Sparky, the manager of the Big Red Machine. So we were, at least for me, I was in awe, and I knew exactly who he was. But when he came in there, he was tough on us. Again, it was that tough love that we needed. And as we got better, you noticed he would loosen the reins. But not until we started to grasp some of these things that he was teaching us. And again, I'm just thankful that he was that guy, because without him, I don't think it would have been quite the same.
Speaking of a man that had a method to his madness, tell us about Gibby, please.
Well, again, Gibby, what a human being. And we were fortunate. Again, we're going back to back into the, you know, late 80s or 80s to late 70s when Gibby came on board and the All-American football player, and he recently was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. But what a unique athlete. I've never, and to this day, I have never met anybody quite like Kirk Gibson, and I mean that all in a good way. I mean, this guy was the most intense, get after it, you know, football mentality that, you know, it took him a while for him to channel that football mentality and channel it into baseball that, you know, he could use to his advantage, which he ended up doing. But again, like all of us, it took a little while for him to grasp all that and to get it together. And, you know, with some tough love from Sparky, most of all with Sparky, but others, you know, that Gibby and others were able to kind of, you know, get it and helped us become, you know, the kind of players that we were. But, you know, what a unique individual. Again, a very talented young man, but very smart. Both his parents were teachers. And when I came back to manage back in 2003, a lot of people thought I was crazy when I asked Gibby to come out of the booth to be one of my coaches. And that was one thing I did right. And I knew a little bit more about Gibby and what he brought to the table. And then look what it led to his career and, you know, being a bench coach for me and then being a bench coach for the Arizona Diamondbacks and then being the manager and being a manager of the year. A sharp guy, well prepared, well detailed, and a great friend of mine. And we're great friends today. So proud of him. Proud of him and what he's accomplished.
1984, the magical season. You guys start 35-5. Unheard of. I don't think it's ever been duplicated. How did you and your teammates do it, Alan?
Well, I think the timing was right. The timing was right for us to win. The 35-5 start, I mean, that's incredible. And I say that today, and I was part of that. And I'm shaking my head again to say, my God, we had some luck. We did. But we had everything that year that Sparky did. It worked. And we got off to a 9-0 start. And then, you know, we reeled off a few more. We won 17 games in a row on the road, which is still an American League record. Sparky's feeling coming out of spring training is that he really wanted to get everybody involved in the lineup, just like spring training when guys are getting rest and you're trying to get everybody, you know, their work and their reps in. But he felt like the first month or so, that was very important. Everybody feel like they're part of that team. So the first part of that year, I mean, we were changing. He was changing the lineup. Everybody he put in there, it worked. And then throughout the season, of course, then your mainstays, you know, they're going to get more of the playing time. But that initial first month of 6 weeks when everybody was contributing, they felt like they were really a part of the team. And that just carried us out throughout the season. Nobody had a career year except for one person. That was Willie Hernandez, who was the Cy Young and the MVP, but nobody won 20 games. Nobody hit 30 home runs, and nobody had 100 RBIs. But we had a lot of guys that contributed at the right time. A lot of guys had real good years, but nobody had like the career year. But we all had good years at the right time. And I think when you look back, that's more important. And we just had guys doing it, clicking at the right time, and we ended up winning the World Championship.
1984 World Series against San Diego Padres. You went 9-for-20, including a pair of home runs in Game 4. We won the series 4-1. You were named the MVP of the World Series. What do you remember about that series?
Well, a lot of good things. What I remember is I was hoping that we would do it again and again, and I found out really how difficult that task is to win a world championship. But we did win it that year. And for me, it had a little bit more of a personal touch. I mean, regardless of who you play and who you would beat, it would be the highlight, no doubt. But for me, I'm from San Diego, and I had been in that stadium many times as a young boy growing up. And, you know, I fantasized and dreamt about being, you know, playing there. And my first game that I ever played there was in a World Series. And so, again, maybe a tad more meaningful just because the story, it's a little bit better story for me to be able to say that I came home and beat my hometown team. That's pretty damn cool. It really is to be able to say that you played against your hometown team and you beat them. And I tell a lot of my friends here that, you know, they'd say, well, what were you thinking? I tell them it was strictly business that the Detroit Tigers were my team. Obviously, a lot of friends on the Padres. I'd worked out with a lot of these guys in the off season, but hey, we had business to take care of. Again, going back to that 35-5 start, we were on a mission, and that mission was to win the World Championship. And fortunately, we won the division. We beat Kansas City in the playoffs, And we beat the Padres all at home. Now, can you have a good time anywhere? Absolutely. But we were able to do that all three times, win it in front of our home fans, which just made that touch just a little bit better. But the most special time in my baseball career.
We're talking Alan Trammell, who had a .285 career batting average, six-time American League All-Star, three-time American League Silver Slugger, four-time American League Gold Glove winner, and along with Jack Morris, are the two most current Baseball Hall of Famers. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with number three, Alan Trammell. Mitch Albom wrote an article on November 21st, 2008. Here's a portion of it. Tram to Lou for two. Yes, why not? Their movement on the crack of a bat is beautiful fury, a sort of Mexican hat dance around second base in which singles die and come back as double plays. Alan, you and Sweet Lou, 20 years together, how did you ever do it?
Well, when you have a partner that's as talented as Lou, that helps. There is no question about it. And I think we all, we're different as we all are. But the one thing that we certainly had in common is we were both taught exactly the same way how to play baseball. And we might express it differently because, again, that's where personalities is, we're all different. But the fact is that he was more of the quiet one. I was more of the vocal one. Again, that's just personalities. But he has not been given the love that he deserves. I mean, he was a special player, and I was hoping that, and I'm still hoping that one day he'll take a seat and have a plaque by Jack and myself and Mr. Tiger, Al Kaline, and Ernie Harwell and some of the others. But this was a special player who, you know, going back to 1976, I want to share this because I don't know if enough people realize the kind of person and the personality that Lou, that he put his ego aside. But going back into 1976, Lou was signed the year before. So in 76, when I came up, I went to Bristol, Virginia, like Lou did the year before, but he went to Lakeland the next year when I signed. And I had met Lou, but he's playing in Lakeland in the Florida State League for Jim Leland. This same Jim Leland, that we all know who Jim is and what kind of a career he had. But Jim's the manager of Lou in the Florida State League. And Lou is the MVP of the league as a third baseman. I have not met Lou yet. So I meet him at the middle of September. We're both selected to go to the Florida Instructional League ball. The first day I meet him, they moved him to second after being the MVP of the league. Didn't say a word. I guess they had some vision that Lou and I might work out together. And from that day on, Lou and I worked together and played together for roughly 20 years. And that's how it happened. But he never said a word. And he checked his ego at the door. And lo and behold, Lou and I are linked for life, the longest running double play combination in the history of baseball. But a lot of people don't know that story of how it started. I was always a shortstop. Lou converts, doesn't say a word. And, you know, I think the Tigers knew a little something. They felt like maybe that was where maybe it would be a best fit for him for the long run. But they were right. And through a lot of work, a lot of reps, the pleasure of playing beside one player for all those years, I think you can imagine how special that was and always will be.
Affectionately known as Tram, we're talking to Alan Trammell. Alan, what is it about baseball that has captivated the hearts of America for 148 years?
Well, that's easy for me. I mean, that's just, again, you go back to your childhood and something that you just love. And it's always been the love, even though I'm a lot, you know, older and don't move around nearly as well. I'm still young at heart, and it's just something that I think that, you know, being on a baseball field, and I'm part of the Detroit Tiger organization and doing in a role as a special assistant, I bounce around and put the uniform on and go into the dugout in the minor leagues and watch the games. It keeps you young, and that's where I'm most comfortable, on a baseball field and in a clubhouse. And that's just something that hopefully that will never change. Unfortunately, I know at some point that will change, but at least for a few more years, I'm going to continue to do those things that keeps me young, keeps me young at heart. But baseball, again, is just something that my first love. I love sports, but baseball was always number one.
Speaking of putting the uniform on, Alan Trammell, you've been blessed to wear the Detroit Tigers uniform for 27 years as a player, coach, manager, now as a special assistant to the GM. What does wearing the old English D mean to you?
Well, it means a lot. It means tradition. It means part of history, the respect that I have. And as a young boy growing up, I probably was a little different than a lot. But I researched, again, it was a love of mine, and I used to read autobiographies. I listened to the radio. We were fortunate here in San Diego. I could pick up the Dodgers and Vin Scully. I could listen to the Angels with, at one point, Dick Enberg was the announcer there as well, and the Padres here. So I had baseball, you know, pretty much 24/7. I can't put it all into words, but again, just I feel so darn fortunate that my life has just been something. Again, I've really never grown up, to be honest with you.
Sunday, December 10th of 2017, you were named to the Baseball Hall of Fame. Alan, when you put your head on the pillow that night, what did you think about?
Well, it was going a mile a minute at that point. I didn't sleep well that night, to be honest with you, because the next day was going to be a press conference with Jack and I. And I hadn't seen Jack. We talked on the phone, but again, you can imagine lots going on. But when we saw each other the next day, man, it was a big hug. And, you know, we leaned on each other and we got through it. But that first night was incredible. And I actually, and this, you can't make this story up, Jack, but I was coming out to the winter meetings, and my, you know, this was already predetermined that I was coming from San Diego to Orlando. It was a direct flight, and there was a bunch of people that live here in San Diego, the San Diego contingency that's with a number of different organizations. But there was two that are very close to me. Trevor Hoffman was on that flight, and Bruce Bochy, who both of those, and I think Trevor, come here in January. I would not be surprised if he is selected, and would be an honor to have him in that induction ceremony on July 29th. Bruce Bochy, who I believe will be a Hall of Fame manager when he retires. There was other player. There was Buddy Black, who's a manager, Brad Ausmus, who works for the Angels now, Rick Renteria, who's the manager of the White Sox. They were all on that flight. Well, I was in the back of the plane. I like the aisle seat. So I was in the back of the plane, but I got the call. They knew I was on this flight. Thank God it was on time. But I got the call from the Hall of Fame and Jane Clark when I was deplaning. And so there was still half of the flight was still, we were trying to get off. I wanted to jump up and down, but I needed to try to keep my cool and keep the emotions in check, because I don't think anybody was really caring about that. They wanted to get off the flight, and they wanted to go to Disney World, you know, that kind of thing. So that was just an emotion that I can't describe. When I was able to get off the flight, the first person I call, obviously, was my wife. They had asked me to wait about 15 minutes to wait for the MLB to announce it. So I gave them that, and I kind of stalled for a few minutes to get to the baggage claim. And then I was able to take a picture because the guys were wondering where the heck I was. And the bags hadn't come yet. But there, lo and behold, Hoffy and Boach and the others were waiting for me. So we took a little group picture that made the paper out here in San Diego. And again, something that, again, I can't make this up, Jack. That's how it came down. So, again, that was a proud moment.
And with that, Alan Trammell and Jack Morris became the 21st and 22nd players in the 125-year Tiger history to be inducted in the Baseball Hall of Fame. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Pasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Alan Trammell. Since 2014, he's served as a special assistant to the Tigers' general manager. We lost a phenomenal Detroiter, Mr. I, in the last year. Tell us about Mr. I, Alan.
Well, I think most people realize how touched that the Detroit Tiger fans, Detroit Red Wing fans, and just people in Michigan in general, what a special person that we lost. You know, what he's meant to the community. How the rebirth of Detroit, which is I'm proud to say as well, how proud and how much and how far the city has come. And it's still coming, but Mr. I is at the forefront of that. And I hope that people realize how special he was, what kind of an owner. That is not normal, that type of ownership and the kind of love that he gave to the players. My gosh. And I know that the Red Wings were able to, again, I believe, with four Stanley Cups. And we weren't able to do that with the Detroit Tigers. I think that's what the players, and I know that Miguel and Justin Verlander and others have said over the years about that's what their number one wish was to win a world championship for Mr. I. Unfortunately, that did not happen. But that does not change anything. The fact of the matter is of what kind of a person and what he did for the community again and the kind of resources that he gave to the general managers in both sports to go out and get the best. And get the best players and try to do what he felt was the best way to try to win. Again, special people like Mr. I, the legacy lives forever, never be forgotten. Wish he was still here, but we now have Chris Ilitch and their family that are still, it's still the Ilitches, and we're proud to have them as still, you know, running the show and hopefully for years and years to come. But again, special people like that don't come around that often, and we were blessed to have Mr. I as our owner.
As I mentioned a little bit ago, since 2014, you've served as a special assistant to the general manager. What does that job entail, Alan?
Well, it kind of gives me a kind of a free rein to be a part of everything, and I am so appreciative again of so many things in my life that they've allowed me to come to spring training and be a part of the major league club and just, you know, to interact with those guys and then go across the street to the minor league side. And during the season that's really where my first love is to go and to instruct and to just be a part. And as I mentioned earlier about being on the bench, watching the games and kind of reading their reaction. That's one of the things that I feel I'm good at. That, you know, I can, if I wanted to say something during a game, I can. Most of the time, I respect, as I played, I understand how it works, that sometimes players are upset that maybe the time to talk to them is after the game, and maybe it's the time to talk to them is the next day. And those are the kinds of things, that's a feel thing that I think I'm pretty good at. But again, I'm interacting with those young players, and there's no better time to be a Tiger right now. Again, we know we're going through that rebuild, just like kind of what happened back in the mid-70s when myself and others came on board. The opportunity was there. So the opportunity is here for these young Tigers to take advantage of this and ultimately become a major league player and play at Comerica Park. So these are the things that, again, I cherish that as long as I'm young and have that energy or young enough, that I can pass the torch is how I describe this, to help these young kids, you know, hopefully if I can help in any way to get them to the major leagues and help the Tigers become a winning club again, that's what I try to do. So again, just a blessing to be a part that they've asked me to do that. They know that I enjoy that, so hopefully I can continue to do this for a few more years.
We're also passing the torch in the managerial role. Tell us about our new skipper, Ron Gardenhire.
Well, Gardy is a good man. We go back a long ways ourselves, and this is something that he is accustomed to doing. And going back to his years with the Minnesota Twins, that he's had projects like this, and he's not afraid of that. And I think that Al and the rest of the guys are very comfortable, how I would describe this, giving him the keys and kind of letting him do his thing. We've got enough to worry about. We've got a lot to work on to get this back on track. But it can be done, and it's, you know, obviously it's hard work. There's no substitute for that. But having Gardy as the captain of the ship, you know, unfortunately, not on Brad. I mean, these things happen. You get in, you know, when you become a manager, you're hired to be fired. Unfortunately, that's how it is. Brad's a friend of mine. I think he was a good manager, but unfortunately, it was, things happen. So Gardy's now the man. I think we're in really good hands, as I mentioned. And again, he's not afraid of this project. So we've got a good one, and look forward to watching him do his thing.
Since 1869, that's 144 seasons, only 14 players have won a Triple Crown. And Miggy in 2012 became the latest. Tell us about Miggy.
Well, Miguel Cabrera would be taking a seat along with me in a few years, as we all know. I mean, this is a special player. And again, Al Kaline has mentioned this over the years, that this is the best right-handed hitter that he's ever seen, not just played against, but ever seen. And he's been in baseball a long time. That's pretty high praise. And I guess you can make the argument, but he's at the top of the list, with a list that's not that there isn't too many. What he's accomplished over his career and is continuing to add on to his numbers. Again, he'll be in the Hall of Fame whenever that 5 years is up, whenever he decides to hang him up. But a special human being, and again, there's not that many like him. You know, there's the elite of the elite, and Miggy is one of them.
Alan Trammell, once again, congratulations from all of us on being named to the Baseball Hall of Fame. What a fantastic honor, and well-deserved.
Well, it's been my pleasure, Jack. Thank you.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahol.
Believe in yourself.